have to call me. I've got your number, but you won't see me until you surrender. Think of it.
Hey, Rob. I have a real quick question for you before we go to our next guest. That noise is still
Absolutely.
There, by the way. So it's not the phone. So I don't know. What is the difference between Michael Jackson and a grocery bag?
I don't know. What is the difference?
One is made of plastic and is dangerous for children to play with. And the other is used to carry groceries.
Oh, boy. Yeah.
Well, we have with us right now on the line the man who has brought us a cult classic. I have seen this play a couple times. It was a movie, actually. But in Boston, it played at the Exeter Theater for, like, I don't know, 20 years or something like that. Every midnight. It was wild. People would get crazed in front of the theater. The Exeter Theater doesn't exist anymore. But the man who put it all together is Richard O'Brien. He's on with us right now on the entertainment line. Hi, Richard.
Hello, Mark.
How are you?
I'm fine, thank you very much.
Nice to talk to you.
Yeah, nice to talk to you, too. Where are you? You're stationed in Boston.
Well, we're in Brockton, Massachusetts, right outside Boston, yeah.
Oh.
The
country.
You're based in where? England, I assume?
Yes, I live in London.
Yeah, that was a pretty good guess, I guess. When did you write Rocky Horror Picture Show?
The picture show was written after the stage show. The stage show came first, the Rocky Horror Show, which I wrote in 1973.
Mm-hmm.
The screenplay for the picture show was written in 74 and filmed at the Christmas of 74, released in 75.
Did you ever have any idea when you wrote that what kind of incredible legs that show would have?
No, I had very modest kind of aspirations for it. I thought it would, we'd have our 5-week run. It was a fringe theater event. I thought at the end of the 5 weeks we would have exhausted our kind of like target audience, whoever they were. But that wasn't to be. We ran for 7 years in London.
Wow. Now, is your background really as an actor more than anything else?
There's no kind of like theatrical dynasty. I don't descend from a family of actors or artists. I didn't know what I wanted to do when I was in my late teens, early 20s, but I felt that the entertainment industry was somewhere where I wanted to go. So I started riding horses in movies in 1965 and graduated from that to a bit of acting and then to a bit of writing, and I've spent the rest of my life in this business.
Well, it seems to me like, at least based on what we just heard a minute ago and what I've heard on Absolute O'Brien, that music is certainly deep in your roots as well.
Yeah, I was, the day I ever first came across the Hit Parade was 1954, and I became a firm fan. Every Thursday night, that used to come on the radio in those days, because I was in New Zealand, no TV. And even the term teenager was coined the very year I turned 13, and rock and roll happened at the same time, and they couldn't have had a more willing acolyte than me. I loved it. I've loved music ever since, but it was rock and roll, really, basically, that started me off.
I understand someone told me that you've been married for a long time, but you actually live alone.
Yeah.
What's the deal with that?
Well, I'm not an easy person to live with. I don't think anybody is, particularly. And, you know, it just puts extra stress on people you love, and I do love my wife dearly. We've been apart for something like 6 or 7 years. We still have to share a bank account, and we share an awful lot of our lives together, our children, and lots of memories, and still good times. We still go out together, and I go down and stay down with them, and Gilles and the kids will come up and stay with me, and it's very amicable and very loving, and which wasn't really happening towards the end of our actually being together. We were kind of like testing each other and trying each other too much.
Yeah, there's something that I thought was pretty funny in your background. You were in Hair, and you also went in Jesus Christ Superstar.
Yeah.
I understand you got fired for making King Herod an Elvis impersonator.
They didn't want Herod as a rock kind of Elvis persona. No. But they did actually only rehearse me one afternoon, and I was put on the next show, and it was terribly under-rehearsed. I don't think I was terribly good at it. The upside of it all, of course, is that I left feeling rather worthless and questioning whether I had any right to be in that industry, and then I went home and wrote the Rocky Horror Show. So, you know, it actually did me a big favour. And I might say to any of your listeners who have just recently been made redundant or put out of work or whatever, it's not necessarily the end of the world. It could be the beginning of a brand new and better start, you know.
That's absolutely true. And absolutely true. And in fact, many people have learned that the last time around when the economy went down, that they came up with something else that they enjoyed even more.
Yeah.
But I can just picture that, because King Herod is the role where he sings, isn't that the one, Jesus, I am overjoyed to
you are the Christ, as the great Jesus Christ, walk across my swimming pool, do something new.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I can just picture it in Elvis's voice. And, you know, it's interesting that, you know, you mentioned Elvis, I mentioned Elvis, because yesterday was 22 years since he's been gone. It seems like yesterday.
It doesn't seem 22 years, doesn't it?
No. Were you influenced at all by his music growing up?
Elvis Presley was should have been one of America's greatest screen stars, apart from his singing. What happened after he came out of the army? Well, even going to the army, I suppose, was indicative of a road, you know, not such a big one, because he didn't have to go. Tom Parker seems to have been a malign influence in his life. But if you look at King Creole and Your House Rock, Loving You, all those early films, you see a fine actor. And, you know, a very, very watchable, classical, Roman profile, a good-looking boy. And as I say, a very sensitive and fine actor. And yet, you know, when he came back from the army, all we got was Roused About and Girls, 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 and this kind of pap that he was forced to just spew out.
That was Colonel Parker's work.
Yeah, it wasn't right, you know. The man should have been looked after. Apparently, one guessed he was quite childlike in his approach to life, and so therefore, you know, he needed somebody to care for him and look after him, really manage him in a sensible way.
When you were a kid growing up in England, were some of the influences in music like Elvis, or were other people that influenced your musical?
Well, I grew up in New Zealand, so I was very lucky because we got the British Hit Parade and we got the American Hit Parade. We got records that perhaps you wouldn't have got here in the States, and records that they wouldn't have perhaps got in Great Britain. It was a very rich time of imitators and similar performances, but of course, like heavy metal fans, you know, you can't get enough of the same. And, you know, there were so many wonderful artists in those days, it just... And when you consider what they were recording on one track, you know, and you can play some of these records today, and the width and depth of the acoustic kind of sound is fantastic. And you think this was altogether one take. They might have done several takes and selected the best one, but that basically was the way it went.
So you were in here, you did the Jesus Christ Superstar, then you sat down and wrote Rocky Horror Picture Show. What was it that inspired the story behind it and the songs and all that? What was in your mind?
I wanted to write a kind of B-movie. I've always loved B-movies and horror, B-movie horror for its comedy level. I always find, you know, the girl in the 90s with the guy in the room saying, and the guy leaves and says, please lock the door after I've gone. You know, and what is the cliche? She'll get changed into a diaphanous gown, pick up a candle and start walking the halls, the corridors of the house. Mm. You know, you were told to stay in the room. I love it.
Mm. Yeah. You know, when I was mentioning earlier before you came on, that I remember the spoof at a show called Fridays did a Rocky Horror Picture Show, where they had Reagan dressed in, it was played by John Rourke in the same outfit as Tim.
Really? Oh, I'd like to see some footage of that.
Yeah, you never saw that, huh?
No.
That was on Fridays on ABC, oh, I don't know, probably 20-something years ago.
Oh, gosh.
And it was really, really hilarious. I'll never forget that. Great dead-on parody.
Oh, I wonder if someone's got a recording of that somewhere. Put, put the word up to your listeners. Just
well, ABC...
Then you can pass it on to me.
You might be able to call ABC TV. They might have it.
Okay.
In their archives. But I guess that, you know, the big question is, what is it that, about the show that you wrote that has endured so long and that has people still in other cities waiting at midnight every night, dressed up as the characters, throwing things, enjoying themselves to this day?
The two elements which I think are responsible for its longevity are one that it's an easily accessible, good time, trashy, chapter foot rock and roll show with lots of laughter, and I have to say, and I'm not blowing my own trumpet here, it is foolproof. The structure of it is all the songs come at the right time, all the jokes fall at the right time, all the things that the events happen at the right time. I've spoken to so many actors that have come up to me and said we love doing a show, it's so easy to do, everything falls at the right place and it's foolproof. That's true. I didn't, you know, I'm not blowing my own trumpet because I wasn't clever enough to I felt instinctively I was doing the right thing, but you know, to actually know that you got it spot on is pretty good, a good feeling. And there's that about it. And the other thing, but if it was just a trashy camp kind of entertainment, that wouldn't really kind of justify 25 years. And I think the other answer is that it feeds the subconscious as well, insofar as it's a root fairy tale. It's like a medieval mystery play, and it fulfills a lot of the requirements of fairy tale and myth and legend. It has psychological motifs and all that kind of stuff, symbolisms built into it, all those kind of things, which I have to say again, I was not aware of when I was doing it, but. There it is, and it pleases on a deeper level as well, I think.
It's not dated either.
No.
Because, you know what, the thing is...
Fairy tales don't, though, do they?
No, I was watching Hair played recently, and it's totally, totally outdated.
Yeah, they captured a moment of time, didn't they, with that piece?
Yeah, it's just completely no good anymore. But Rocky Horror Picture Show is still there, still playing. And I wanted to ask you about all the different countries it's playing. And I understand it plays in, like, 20 countries.
As far as the film is concerned, I don't know where it's playing or how often. I know some of the stage shows around the world, Australia, two going through Europe at the moment, a British tour is going around at the moment, and I believe there's several stock companies, repertory companies in the States doing it at the time. So yeah, there's quite a bit of publicity still. It still gets an audience. We've never released the amateur rights. Although Samuel French, who administer amateur rights and stock rights, repertory rights, bought the right to do so over 20 years ago, we've never allowed them to release the amateur rights because there's people still want to see it in a first-class professional way.
Yeah, that's interesting. Is this thing making you incredible amounts of money?
No, and that's also very fortunate. I'm not crying poverty here, but I've always been aware that too much. Too soon, and you know, they've generally kind of spoils a person. They've given to excess of behavior, and you know, go down a long and perhaps you know, dark road. I could have very easily slipped into that kind of life, I think, if I'd been very rich very quickly, very young. But you know, it came in small amounts, but steady amounts, and it was manageable amounts, and it always has done. And I appreciate that. I get about 8 or 10% of the box office if it's showing anywhere. So yeah, I guess you could say that it keeps me going. It's a great pension, and it's put the kids through school.
Just one quick question before I let you go.
Yeah.
Absolute O'Brien is available. It's from Medical Records. It's available in all the stores at this point.
Is it going to be available from Olio Records?
Olio
Records, and it's September 7th, it's being released. I think probably Warehouse and Virgin will probably stock it.
Amazon.com will have it on the internet.
Yes, the internet will certainly do that.
Yeah. So thank you so much for coming on, Richard, and have a nice flight.
Thank you, Mark.
Take care.
God bless. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Talk radio at its best. 1410 WMSX, the talk of Metro South.
And welcome back to That's Life with